Good morning, writers.
Good morning.
There we go. Yes. I said good morning, writers. I'm here. Well, here we are at the last session of Gibbs Composition, and actually this is the last session that I'll be teaching you in the Gibbs program. The year has gone by very quickly, and I just think of the growth for you as students and learners this year. Just think, when we first started in September, we were talking about the very basic elements of nouns and verbs, subjects and verbs, and now here we are composing expository essays. So in, almost, is it 20 lessons, 20 sessions, you've come a long way, and I'm grateful for the time that you've invested. Pastor and I were just talking about that this is really a condensed version, if you will, if you think about the grammar class and also the composition class. And so it takes time on your part to learn as well, and also takes time on my part to teach you. You'll be receiving your character sketch essays today, and you'll see my comments. And I did not have to write as many, for the most part, as I did in lesson one. However, every comment that you see on there, I hope that you read it, you take it to heart, and if there's a revision to consider, that you would. I'm here as your editor, but I'm also here as your friend. As this quote says, no passion in the world is equal to the passion to alter someone else's draft. That can only be said by a writer, or it only can be said by an English instructor. And that is true. When I receive your essay, I read it, I take in the content, and then I go in there and say, how can I help this writer to become an even better writer, a stronger writer as a result? George Moore, another writer, said, anyone who can improve a sentence of mine by the omission of placing of a comma is looked upon as my dearest friend. So I hope, again, that you see me in that way, that I'm here as your friend, I'm here as a fellow writer, as a fellow believer, and your teacher in Gibbs to help develop you. It was interesting to see some of the comments from you students regarding writing, and remember I said on the first day of the session of Gibbs Composition that I was going to teach composition probably differently than you've been taught before. And I approach it from the holistic standpoint, that we don't just work in parts, and at first I teach you how to write an introduction, then I teach you how to write the body, and then I teach you how to write the conclusion, but that we looked at it as the entire piece. And also I wanted to help you think about your attitude toward writing, and also your attitude as a writer, because that, for many of you, had to switch. You had an erroneous view of what it took to be a good writer, and you think that you did not have to be yourself. You felt that you needed to be somebody else, and as a result, you became very stiff, and you became very foreign, and as a result, your readability level was very low. And quite often, you, in the past, perhaps turned in assignments, and you weren't pleased with the work, and you hand it to your teacher and say, here it is, but this is not really who I am. It sounds so much different. And I'm saying, I want you to dispel those thoughts, and I want you to be yourself on the page. So I hope that I've helped you to learn some of those techniques and grasp those concepts. As you think about the two areas that I've worked with you this past semester, you'll probably fall down to these points. Number one, I wanted you to write with active voice for the most part. And the second thing I worked with you on is to remove your writing of clutter, or sometimes I would call it wordiness. Please forgive me for at times taking my pen and marking on the text my suggestions of what you could get rid of, but I thought that was the best way for me to show you. Fighting clutter is like fighting weeds. The writer is always slightly behind, is one of the things that I view in my own writing as well. So as a result, I attempted to remove superfluous words or phrases or sentences, and I want you to know that I may be wrong when I made my suggestion. These are only suggestions as your editor. But when I X marks a spot, or I take that pen and I slice and dice, I think this can be deleted and the meaning won't be affected as a result. But again, you as writers decide. You are the final decision maker when it comes to your own work. So you read the sentences without the material, and then you see if it works. But you're the one who makes the call. Yes. Bill. So this is what Philip says. Sometimes he wrestles with the fact that his flavor may be wordiness, and he's having a hard time seeing his way through it. That could probably have been the case for all these years, Philip, and nobody really pointed it out to you. This is the case for all of us. It's sometimes a way of thinking. We love our own words. And it's hard for us sometimes to rid ourselves of them when it comes into our writing, but we have to remind ourselves of this. I'm writing to an audience. I'm writing to other people to understand what I'm saying. So clarity and grace are two words that I want you to remember as you think about your writing. And sentences can go bam, but again, you're looking at variety. So some of your sentences are longer, and usually the rule is if you have three long sentences, then you better have a short one, because mentally, the reader has to stay with you, and there's this psychological effect for us between the writer and the reader. And so we always keep that in mind. So sometimes you might see that I wrote, this is a very long paragraph, which means I was tired after I was done reading it, so you need to break it up. Or these were many long sentences in a row. So if I, as a reader, have to go back and reread the sentences because they were so long and there was so much in them, then that's not the essence of clarity. We don't want our readers to have to do that. Can you cut too much? Absolutely. And then you get those very simplistic declarative sentences. And for some of you writers, you'll see that on the work that I sent back to you. So these were 6 short, simple, declarative sentences in a row. I need transitions. I need some complex sentences. I need compound sentences. So variety really is the name of the game, so to speak, in our writing. Does that help to answer that question? As you think about the work that you received from me, for the most part, your first paper was probably festooned with markings, and entire paragraphs are noted for deletion. And so you... And now, in the future, though, you'll no longer have Carol Haviland looking at your work. So mentally, you're going to be putting those brackets around your own writing, and you're going to think in terms of that. In fact, a couple of my students have said to me, Mrs. Haviland, I don't care wherever I go, I see your markings in my work. So that you've left that effect. And in some ways, that's not a bad thing. We all can look back to people who've helped us and developed us as communicators. And so I hope that in that way I've taught you the importance of clarity and grace in your writing. So from here on in, after I am finished with the class, you need to look for clutter in your own writing and prune it ruthlessly is my recommendation. Reexamine each sentence you put on the page, and you ask yourself the question, is every word doing its work? Can any thought be expressed with more economy? Is anything pompous or pretentious? Am I hanging on to something that's useless just because I think it's so beautiful? And I don't want to let it go. Have something to say, and say it as clearly as you can. That is the only secret of style. To me, style is just the outside of content, and content the inside of style. Like the outside and inside of the human body, both go together. They can't be separated. I quoted from two writers there. One is Matthew Arnold, and the other is Jean-Luc Godard. So this course has zeroed in on two basic principles. It's good to write clearly, and anyone can. And that's why I refer to all of my students from day one as writers. You can learn to write well. It's no mystery. Some people are born with that gift and talent, but for the most part, when I think of the hundreds, maybe thousands of students I've taught throughout the years in writing, they all learned to write well if they were ready to switch their thinking about their attitude toward writing. So it's not a mystery. Writers are not just those people, like I said on the first day of class, that live in bohemian garrets and write one novel after the next. You can learn how to write well. We have to learn how to express ourselves in clear, coherent language, and we've learned painfully that this is a difficult task. for us as writers. And it's a daunting one for many. And that's why I said a couple of weeks ago that writing is most difficult for writers, because we now look at our work differently. And we realize we're not just writing for ourselves. We're not just writing to turn in a paper. We're not just writing to complete an assignment. We're not just writing to submit an article to a magazine or to the journal, but we're writing for someone else. We're writing for an audience who's eager to learn from us. And we want to do all that we can to communicate effectively. So we ask ourselves these questions. What is it in my writing that makes readers judge my writing as they do? How can I diagnose my own writing now to anticipate their judgments and the intended effect of the writing? And how can I revise my sentences so that readers will think of them better? Also remember these two basic principles that I kept hammering away at every session. Good writing is aware of its audience. And the second principle that I've taught is show, don't tell. And we learned many showing techniques in our writing. We learned the vitalizing techniques of concretions. We learned the vitalizing techniques of humanizing your writing, putting real people in there. We also learned the humanizing techniques of the audio portion of your program, which means that we used quotations. People will handle paraphrasing for a while, but people really like to see direct quotations and also hearing people's exact words. So we tried to do that as much as we could in the character sketch essays. Most people won't realize that writing is a craft, but you have to take your apprenticeship in it like anything else. And essentially, style, as we're looking at rewriting for style, resembles good manners. It comes of endeavoring to understand others, of thinking for them rather than for yourself, or thinking that is with the heart as well as the head. And when we do both, and I don't care what the topic may be, we are affecting an audience. The ability to simplify means to eliminate the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak. So we are in the process of our papers right now. We stripped down so we can build it back up again. And that's going to be the portfolio project that I'm going to talk to you about in a little bit. Right now, I believe as I leave you, you know what the essential tools are of what makes for good writing and the job that you've been designed to do. But we know this. As carpenters, if you are a carpenter and if you have weak nails, you know that the structure is going to crumble. But the same is true for your sentences. If your sentences are weak, that writing will crumble as well. So that's why I kept pushing you to look at your verbs, which is a crucial component of your sentence, and then also look how you construct it and where you put your sentence in relation, or your subject in relationship to that, and also the details that you had in it. So syntax was very important in our writing. It's interesting sometimes for us to see how other writers speak about writing, and it helps us because it's confirming to us. So you're going to see a few quotes from writers right now. This writer says, nobody should suppose that good writing, the kind that says what it means while being pleasant to read, has ever been easy. So hopefully that makes you feel better as you go through the various transitions in your writing process. When I was in college, I revised nothing. I wrote out my papers, typed them up, and turned them in. It would never have crossed my mind that what I had produced was only a first draft and that I had more work to do. The idea was to get to the end, and once you had got to the end, you were finished. And now we realize just the opposite is true. You have gone through drafts, you've done free writing, and then you turned in your first draft to me, which I returned to you, and now comes the revision process, because the essence of writing is rewriting. So you're going to get them back, and you're going to look at your drafts differently. But how many of you could attest to the fact that what Nora Ephraim said is absolutely true about how you viewed writing perhaps prior to this class? Can I get a thought about that? And quite often, I've heard from many students say, and I never liked it. I never was really satisfied with the piece I came, but I was just writing for a teacher, and I was writing to get a grade, and I hoped at least I got a C. But I thought, did that ever make you satisfied? No. Did you ever enjoy writing? And most would come back with, no, not for the most part, but it was something that I was called to do. Philip, you didn't care about what you were writing. Who cares? It's done. And As a result, we never learn to appreciate writing or write well. Yes, Robert.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the higher the level, the more editing you need, was Robert's comment on that. Melinda. And Melissa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Audience of one. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, Melinda shares she always wrote to an audience of one, which was the instructor, so turn it in and I don't really care. If you would be in my college composition classes, you'd care there because you're not just going to write to the teacher. Those papers go out to the students and they become your peer editors, and then it goes out to a larger audience as well, because that's the worst way to write when you think, I'm writing to an English instructor, and all of a sudden you become paralyzed. And you shut down and you don't even sound like Melinda anymore. And that's why you end up not caring about your writing. Oh. Yes. Yes. You're right. And it's different here, Melinda says, because of the content and because of what you're writing about. And, of course, you want to affect an audience for the Word of God. Here's some other quotes of writers. No style is good that is not fit to be spoken or read aloud with effect. And also another quote, I do everything in my power to make my writing not look like writing. So let me comment on a few of these. No style is good not to be fit to be spoken or read aloud. Please, again, read your writing aloud. You will be able to find your omissions. You'll be able to find where you missed your commas. You'll be able to find where I need transitions here. You'll be able to hear. These are too many declarative sentences in a row, and it sounds choppy. You'll be able to hear your wordiness. If you're stumbling over your words, guess what? The reader will as well. So I cannot emphasize enough to you that when you think, okay, I think I'm almost at the point where I'm ready to submit my paper, you take that step back and you read it aloud. Or, this is what I do sometimes, I read it aloud to my husband, and I let him hear it and see what he thinks about it. So if he thinks, you know, I didn't follow you on this point, then I think, oh, I need to go back. But again, you want to read your work out loud. And then you also can find out, I needed to put an analogy in there. There was no illustration. I was bored in this section. So if you think you're bored, guess what? Your reader will be too. And I do everything in my power to make my writing not look like writing. Here's an example of what that is. Again, I'm sorry, but I'm talking about that five-paragraph essay where you have the introduction, you have the three paragraphs of content, and then you have your close, and does that not look like writing? Again, we add variety. We don't go by those patterns and formulas. We always think in terms of what is best for the audience and how can I reach that audience. In speaking, you can use timing, a look, inflection, pauses, but on the page, all you have is commas, dashes, the amount of syllables, and a word. When I write, I read everything aloud to get the right rhythm. Did you hear that again? These are writers who say the same thing. Rhythm is an important part of it. You'll see me write on some of your papers, great parallelism here, great rhythm. I like the sound of your writing here. That's what it's all about. Readers psychologically go through that, and if they feel that there's a sense of completion, that's another satisfying element for a reader. So all of this, these processes take place. When you think about the punctuation, now you're on the correction side of your writing. Remember, writing is first creative, and then it is corrective. And so now when we look at the corrective side, and you'll see me go through and do some of that editing, I'll show you where semicolons might have gone, commas could have gone. I'll show you where maybe a dash will work more effectively here. A colon might work here. You have a toolbox of techniques in that toolbox where you can affect the flow and the rhythm of your reader's perception of what you're writing. So you want to make use of that. Most amateur writers only use that period, and then when they use a comma, they use it in the wrong place. So we want to make sure that we use our grammatical structures correctly. Writing and rewriting are a constant search for what it is one is saying. And I revel in the prospect of being able to torture a phrase once more. I mean, are we at that place now? If you are, you are indeed a writer. If you go back and you say, oh, I don't know if that is said well. I want to think if I could go back and say it better, more effectively. You have certainly moved over to that place where you can say, I understand what these writers are talking about. And then the writing and rewriting a constant search for what it is one is saying. It's always very difficult for me to turn in my final submission on something that I've written, because I always think I could have maybe done something more written in this other way. But there comes a time when that will occur, and we have to let go and say it's ready. For me, it's mostly a question of rewriting. It's part of a constant attempt on my part to make the finished version smooth, to make it seem effortless. A story I've been working on was rewritten 15 complete times, and that's the whole thing. When somebody reads your work, they're going to think, oh, that must have been easy. That probably didn't take him or her much time to write. They don't understand what goes on behind it, and that's okay. You want them to make it seem effortless, because you don't want your readers to work at trying to figure out what you are communicating. And haven't we all been there as readers, where we have to work at it? And then quite often we don't come away with the content because we had to work so hard at trying to decipher its meaning. If you recall that I mentioned to you that that another important element of good writing, if you want to write well right now, is to study for the craft. And you go out and you read writers that affect you, writers that you enjoy reading. And now you look at it from a writer's eyes and you say to yourself, what are they doing well? Why do I like this writer? And now you're viewing the title and you're asking yourself the question, how did that draw me in? You're looking at that first paragraph, which sometimes can be one of the more difficult ones to write. How did they capture my interest? You look at the transition into the body of the text. You look at the various elements they use to keep your attention, the rhythm, the flow, the humanizing, the vitalizing techniques, the concretions. You look even at how they paragraph, how they quote. You look at the stories they use, and you look at how they end. And I'm sorry, but I did warn you on my opening days with you that my class is going to affect the way you read. Because now you're going to read like a writer. And you're going to write like a reader. And has that occurred? Has that transformation taken place? Do you find yourself looking at work differently in that way? And that is going to help you so much in your development as a writer. So this class will not end in that way. I have now given you the permission to call yourself a writer. And as a result, you're going to view this work differently. Warren Wiersbe has written 150 books in his lifetime, maybe more by now. He started in the 1950s. He was pastor at Moody Bible Institute for a number of years. He wrote the B series, from the Old and New Testament, the commentaries. And he's a learned man. And yet when you read his work, you realize he knows his audience. He knows his audience, and for the most part, he's not writing to theologians. He's writing to people who want encouragement in the Word of God. One of his books is When Life Falls Apart, a small little book. And we already know his topic, don't we, by its title. So he has a very select audience in mind. It's the audience of believers who think, I don't know where my life's going to go from here. I can't imagine that all these things would have happened to me. Where is the Lord in this? So from the beginning, he needs to capture his audience's attention. He knows for the most part that they're discouraged and they're asking questions and they're seeking the Lord in the midst of when life fell apart. So when you look at his opener, and I'm going to show you three slides, he had three paragraphs for his opening. This is what he wrote. He said, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle." I'm not certain who first made that statement, but it gives wise counsel indeed. All of us are fighting battles and carrying burdens, and we desperately need all the help we can get. The last thing any of us needs is for somebody to add to our problems. It isn't the normal demands of life that break us. It's the painful surprises. We find ourselves fighting battles in a war we never declared and carrying burdens too for reasons we don't understand. I'm not talking about reaping what we sow, because most of us are smart enough to know when and why that happens. If we break the rules, we have to accept the consequences. But sometimes things happen even when we don't break the rules. When life hands us these painful surprises, we start to ask questions. We wonder if perhaps we've been cheated. We begin to doubt that life makes any sense at all. Bad things do happen to God's people. And when these bad things happen, our normal response is to ask, "Why us?" That was his opener. Now, as you look at it, did it include the elements that we have studied this past semester in what makes writing good? What makes writing good is that it's aware of its audience. We also know that it's important for the writer to capture the audience right from the beginning, or otherwise he or she might leave us. Can we study what techniques Warren Wiersbe used in his opener? Can you share with me? Now you can speak the writer's language with me. What did he use to bring us or bring his audience in? Right, he did. And then did he grab his audience right from the beginning? All of us. He included himself in that audience, didn't he, interestingly enough? And as we look at the way he continued, we notice that he used a variety of sentence patterns and structures in his writing. We notice that they weren't all declarative. We also know that he used transitions in the writing. And we also see that he ended with a question, didn't he? So he used the question opener. We also noted this, I think when I read it, I emphasized it. He used italics at the end, but sometimes things happen even when we don't break the rules. He put the italics in there because it forces the reader to emphasize that word. So as writers, we have all these various tools available to us to capture our audience's attention. Now, last week, we learned some of the four elements of good writing when we're writing expository essays, of which this book is. And it's thesis, audience, purpose, and tone. Thesis, audience, purpose, and tone. Quite often those are established right at the very beginning of our writing. So, in essence, what's his thesis? What's his thesis? Yes, bad things. It's hard to understand why, yes. Oh, why bad things happen to good people. Thesis, okay, audience. Who's his audience? Believers who are suffering. Thesis, audience, purpose. What's his purpose? Remember, purpose means intended effect. To instruct and encourage people who think, my life has fallen apart, where do I go from here? Thesis, audience, purpose, tone. Tone is usually established right at the beginning of your work. What is the tone in his essay? And remember, the tone is the emotional mood that comes across in your writing. What is his tone? Caring? Compassionate? What are you hearing? Identifying with the person that's having problems. Empathizing as well. So the tone is established. He has to be very careful. He can't be judgmental. He can't be coming across as critical. He has to be very careful in the tone that he expresses in this writing. So again, we remember this important element of studying for the craft. Now, the writing process goes through its various phases that we've noticed. And after we've written our notes, as we did in our character sketch essay, we conducted our research. Then we began dumping our ideas onto paper. And they weren't probably in some logical order, and that's okay because we were free writing or getting those ideas out there. So we emptied our head of all that we could think about that particular topic. And then for some of you, you wrote as fast as you could and you didn't stop. Others of you like outlining, and that's fine too. But remember, you have to be careful because outlining can produce rigidity. And so you have to keep that in mind as you're organizing your paper. Most people experience an awkward and sometimes paralyzing translating process in writing. Once they get their ideas and they've dumped them on paper, then they say, now let's see, how shall I say this? And that's some of the key questions we ask ourselves. What is the best way for me to bring this across? How to open it? How do I want to make sure that my audience understands the principles that I'm teaching? So free writing helps you to learn to just say it. And we went through that process in our personal narrative essay. So writing gains strength in subsequent drafts. So draft one was the messy part of it. We wrote with the door closed. Remember that? A draft two, writing becomes more precise and refined. So then in draft two, you handed it over to me, and I was able to serve as your editor and your friend and give you advice along the way. Now draft two comes back to you. So draft three, you go through the text, you take out everything that you don't think should be there. A good writer sees what to cut, and sometimes when we cut, we add something maybe written a different way, or sometimes we leave it out. But that's draft three. And then draft four, five, ten. Remember, one writer says that he rewrote his drafts 15 times. Don't be satisfied until every word is carrying its weight. Every sentence moves the reading along. Good writing is good editing. Good writing depends a great deal on what you edit out. Are you tired of my saying that? Are you becoming weary of that? Because our tendency as writers, and I am in the same situation as you, is just to get all those words out and then forget to edit. Because when we write, we fall in love with our words and we don't like to let them go. And so when we have if we have an editor, show us differently, then we have to be willing to see that. But now you're going to be your own editors for the most part. Good writing and good editing work together. So with every draft, you both write and edit. You change sentences, you add information, you move material around, and you delete. I have many times sat at my computer, and I've written my paper, or I've written my article, and I look at it, and there's some things in there I don't like, but I know how much time it took me to write that. Oh, I know how much time it took me to write that, and I'm trying to convince myself. No, that's just fine, Carol. That's just fine. You just leave it right where it is. Because if you delete them, then you're starting, in some ways, right from the beginning. And so I'm staring at that, and there's that conviction, no, it's not about you. It's about your audience. And so here we go. I hit that delete button, and there it is. And there it is. What did you say, Pucci? Put it on another one. So Pucci wants to put it on another draft just in case in the future. So we're all there. I understand your pain when you're going through and looking at the work and we're moving material around. It's interesting for me to watch some of my processes as well when I'm writing. And I'm so grateful that I do live in the age of technology because I can take things that I have more toward the end of my article, and then I can move it up to the beginning. And so I am sometimes moving paragraphs around as I'm writing, but it's very hard for me just to say, okay, that's it, let it go. But there does come that time when that has to occur. I've got some of my favorite stuff. I have no compassion when it comes to cutting. No pity, no sympathy. Some of my dearest and most loved bits of writing have gone with a very quick slash, slash, slash. These four pages out because something was heavy there. Cutting leads to economy, precision, and to a vastly improved text. So again, you're not alone. We're not alone. We've moved into that place now where we are thinking in terms of being a writer. When we think of your story, Melinda, when you were writing to an audience of one, and that was a teacher, you didn't think in terms of cutting. You didn't think in terms of editing. You just thought in terms of, let's get as much paper, words as I can on the paper. What's the requirement now again? Okay, three pages it is, and in it goes. And you didn't think in terms of the clutter. And it also was difficult, I think, for many of you to write to an audience of one as a teacher, where you thought of the critical element of that audience. It's hard to be relaxed and yourself when you have the highway patrol following you for the past mile, and you're wondering, what did I do? What's going on? You know, and the same is true sometimes when you're writing to that audience of one and it's the English instructor, and you just can't relax and be yourself. So we get rid of all of those barnacles. We edit clutter. And we're not trying to prove our brilliance. Don't use vocabulary that you typically don't use. You know, if you don't use terms like moreover or indeed, then don't use them in your writing trying to impress your audience. Write from who you are. Now, if you use those terms, then you know how to use them effectively in your writing. But don't all of a sudden try to sound like somebody you're not, because that's when we get to the place where we don't like our writing and we turn it in and say, this really doesn't sound like me, but I'm just turning it in a hope that you think it does sound like me. But we know in our hearts that's not who we are and it doesn't express that. Yes. How to write, okay. Melinda tries to write how she talks. Yes.
But it's super wordy.
Yes.
When I read it,
yes,
I'm bored.
Well,
so then I think, are people bored when I talk?
If you're wordy, yes.
I don't use words
yes.
in my writing.
Yes.
I don't use when I talk.
Okay, here's how I can answer that. Yes, you first just write your talk.
So
yes,
readable.
That's called a free write.
Because
right.
How do you make it be you, but not write?
Because you start with that free write, and you do write your talk. You absolutely do, whatever it is you're writing on. And then you have to keep in mind who your audience is. So, for instance, your audience, I am assuming, for the personal narrative, is different than your expository essay. What's your topic for your expository essay? Peace versus anxiety. So your tone and your writing and the style you're using probably looks different than what you wrote when you're doing the personal narrative. However, there's still Melinda in there in the peace versus anxiety. I'm assuming that is the case. I'm assuming that's why you selected it as your expository essay. So yes, we write our talk, but we don't try to sound foreign. And we realize that we still have to follow the rules of the game. So don't forget this. Now, writing is first creative, but then what is the other side? Corrective. And there's that balance as well. So writing is good manners, and we want to keep that in mind. So when you say you write your talk, draft number one, but now you're going to have to make it legal by draft number 10. So we're trying to communicate no sidetracks making readers' mind wander. That will hurt your writing. So we edit tightly, and we get ourselves out of the way, and we ask ourselves questions as we're looking at our work. Am I droning here? Is our reader ready to silence me? Is there any way I can lighten this up? Now, again, we think of our audience, and some of the pieces that I write are very academic, and I'm aware of that. I realize that I'm writing to other academians, and it has to sound that way. But some of my audience, too, is very personable, and I have to have the tone that fits that. So again, you do your audience analysis, and you consider them when you're putting together your work and in your writing. Polishing is a careful process. So we're now at the polishing phase of the writing, meaning your writing has come back to you, and now you're looking at your work, and you're going to go back, and you're going to rewrite it for style, and you're going to say, this is going to be the best it can be. And that's what's going to end up in your portfolio. So you're going to check every paragraph, every sentence and word. You're going to polish your grammar. You're going to be aware of the weak is passive verbs. And you're going to ask the question, how can I get the reader to see, to feel the urgency of this point? So think again about the writing process. First, you wrote with the door closed. Nobody was there. It was just you and the words on the page. And, of course, the Holy Spirit directing you as you chose your topic and started your writing process. And then you opened the door slightly, and in that door perhaps came a trusted colleague. I know you had several that looked at some of your work. The door came open a little farther, and I came in. And I came in and said, here I am. I'm your instructor. I'm your editor. I'm going to help you along the way. So then you take that work, and the door is not open all the way yet. So you go back in, and you might have closed a little bit. You're doing your work. You can open a little bit. Maybe you're going to show another trusted colleague, and then you're closing it again. And then there comes a time when you say, all right, here we go. I have to open that door all the way. And out you go, and now it is to the audience that you've had in mind when you've been writing your work. And that's what the portfolio is all about. I'll be talking to you about that in a few moments. Diction is word choice and word usage. You use words that your audience can understand. And that's how we always come in terms of, in mind with, will my audience understand my vocabulary and my tone? Find ways to say what you mean in fresh ways. Now with old, trite, worn out words and phrases, which means those cliches. Yes, Robert. Yes. 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 Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Robert talked about the fact that we tend to have spiritual cliches that we use, and that they become in some ways worn out and tired, and people in some ways even dismiss them because they've heard them so many times. I'm so glad that you brought that out. So we have to be careful about that as well. If you are going to use a cliche, if you must, don't put it in quotation marks, because that even emphasizes it more than ever. That these aren't my own words. I know this is Warren, but I didn't know what else to say, so here we go. I'm going to use this Warren Tyrell expression again. So again, we're always asking ourselves questions as writers. Will my reader hear a strongly conversational, living voice coming through? Or am I beginning to sound like a book or like a drone? I don't know where my mouse is. Will my reader hear a strongly conversational, living voice coming through? Or am I beginning to sound, and I have the wrong two there, to sound like a book? Do you know what I mean when I ask that question? We've all had textbooks that we've had to labor through, haven't we? And we knew we had to labor through them. I mean, we're a student in the class. This is course content. It was technical writing. We understood that. It had, thankfully, visuals in there that helped us along the way, and we loved those visuals. But it was a book, and it sounded like a book, and that's what we expected. But we don't expect that with the articles that we write or the publications that we give, or even when we speak or teach in Sunday school, at retreats, at seminars. We want to make sure that we have a strongly conversational voice coming through. Fluidity is important. Some of you have had troubles with transitions, which is keeping the reader moving. Careful writing moves the reader smoothly from one paragraph to the next. So please work on your transitions, and I've given you suggestions along the way in your writing. Be sure each sentence is somehow connected to the ones immediately before it and after it. Don't just jump from one point or one paragraph to the next. And I just heard Pastor Roxer talk about subordinate clauses. They are wonderful when it comes to transitional phrases into another paragraph. They do justice to your writing. So be sure you examine your transitions well. This is a question that one of you raised. Long sentences, short sentences, how should I look at that? Remember my statement, if you have three long sentences, you probably want to have a short one. But you want to have variety in your writing, because your sentence length, your paragraph length, creates an emotional, psychological effect on the reader. You've all seen these elephant-like paragraphs, haven't you, written by authors? And psychologically, if you see this large paragraph, you skip it, or you tend to think, oh my, this is going to take me a lot to go through that. Or here's what I find myself doing. I'll have to go back and reread it again, and go back and reread it again. Careful writers know how to play long and short sentences off each other. Each sentence has its strength, and writers work those strengths. So vary your sentence length. Be here and be alive. You've heard me say this throughout the semester, the importance of your verb choice. Active voice brings immediacy to your writing. A basic sentence structure of the subject, action, result. Passive reverses that order. Here's an example. She was ignored by her friends. The rewrite? Her friends ignored her. Can you hear the difference? Can you see the difference? Because she was ignored by her friends, that put the friends in the prepositional phrase and it hid it there, and we know that no subjects found in a prepositional phrase. It's the friends who did the ignoring. They are the ones who should be the subject of that sentence. Was the active verb her, and then, of course, her is the object, the direct object of their ignoring her, their strength in those active verbs. So you let the reader peek over your shoulder. Readers should see themselves in your essay. If the reader finds himself or herself in your essay, you will keep the attention. And those are called crossing points in your text. So you ask, what's in it for the reader? And you want to push toward that reader identification in your writing. So the essence of writing is rewriting. And we examine our opener. We examine our close. We examine our title. We examine the middle of our sentence. And the middle of our essay. And the lead is your bait. So we want to pay very close attention to how we open our work. This writer says, I place great emphasis on a title and a first sentence. You must think of your potential reader as a shy and reclusive trout. Your task is to cast a fly so vivid and appealing that, forgetting all else, he will leap at your bait. So in the past, how much time did you spend thinking about your title? Let's be honest. Quite often, that's the last thing we thought about, and we just put it on and hope for the best. But now, you understand the importance of your title, and when I looked at your character sketch essays, you had great read-me titles. And for the most part, some of you used the colon title, which worked well. So we place emphasis on our titles, but we also place emphasis on that first sentence and also our first paragraph. When you're speaking, keep this in mind as well. Keep in mind, how do you grab the attention of your audience right from the beginning? That's crucial. And then that all-important close, think in terms of the grand design. Conclusion is not the takeaway. Takeaway is what the reader is learning throughout the essay, what you want the reader to come away with. But the conclusion is not the afterthought. Leave readers with something that lodges in their minds. That's our end goal as writers. The spirit of revising. In an interview with Ernest Hemingway, the interviewer asked, how much rewriting do you do? It depends, he said. I rewrote the ending of Farewell to Arms, the last page of it, 39 times before I was satisfied. Was there some technical problem there? What was it that had you stumped getting the words right? So as we think about even those who have turned out one novel after the next, again, rewriting was an important part of it. In fact, I read somewhere that he revised the last chapter of The Sun Also Rises 39 times before he said he got it right. Nearing the finish line, the Bible must be part of your own soul. To be an effective communicator, the Word of God has to have touched you first. So you have something to say. So you have something to communicate. And our tendency can be, when we're not thinking like this, is to jump into the project, to jump into the lesson we're to teach, or the article we're to write. I hope that you think about this, because it's invaluable to you to spend time with the Lord in His Word, in prayer, and allowing the Holy Spirit to direct your words. So, keep a notebook. Keep a journal. Now you're communicators, and you probably will be called to write at some time or speak. And so as you spend time with the Lord and in His Word, you write down the verses that you've been looking at, and you write what the Lord has shown you, and you keep this journal and notebook. And many times you'll find what to write on right there in that journal or in that notebook. So allow Scripture to speak to you. The Bible draws me in and then draws my readers toward the Lord. Do not become mechanical in this, dear Gibbs students. Do not approach this like you would some other academic endeavor. Do not approach this like you would at some other course that you've taken outside of Gibbs. Think in terms of how is the Lord going to affect me, and if it so be that I can communicate to others, may I do so in the power of your Spirit and your strength. If you don't approach it this way, you will fall flat on your face, spiritually speaking. There's nothing worse than to communicate to someone something that you've not embraced yourself, because then it becomes legalism. In fact, Martin Luther said, to pray well is the better half of study. Don't forget that. You might sometimes be given an assignment. You sometimes might be given, you're going to be teaching at this camp or this Sunday school, and you think, oh, that is going to be quite an undertaking for me. But if the Lord's called you to do it, and you're humble before Him, He will direct you in ways that you can't even imagine. Not that there's not work on your part. Of course there's time spent in that, but you realize that it's directed by the Spirit of God and His Word. So I want to leave you with that, because I don't want you to approach this just academically. First, I want you to approach it spiritually. So as we're nearing the finish line, we're preparing our portfolio. I had a chance to visit with Pastor a few minutes before I taught, so I have a timeline in mind when it comes to the portfolio. This has been an invaluable process and resource for my students, not only the Gibbs students, but I also have conducted portfolios in my composition classes. And in essence, this is what occurs. The students have received from me my comments and editing on their essays. So they go back now and they look at them, they rethink them, and they revise them. And they think, how can I make this better? And now when I send the portfolio to Mrs. Helland, I'm saying to her, in essence, this is my published work. Now, are you going to take every suggestion that I've given you? No, I'm sure you won't. And I won't be offended at all if you choose not to. Because you're the writer and you're making that decision. But you're rewriting these essays the best that they can be, because you're thinking in terms of the fact that they are written for an audience. Now, in the portfolio, and you don't have to give me a physical portfolio, but you can give me an electronic one, meaning that I receive from you your three revised essays, the best they can be, and the fourth element in the portfolio is the reflection letter. It's a very crucial element. because you need to take a step back and revisit what you've done. I have given you in the handout the elements of the reflection letter, but I thought it best if I could read you one of them from my former Gibbs class. Here's how it reads. Dear Mrs. Helland, you motivated me to write well, to study for the craft, and write for an intended audience. You skillfully taught Gibbs composition, and your handouts have become a writing resource, manual to me. You also opened my eyes to the possibility of a writing ministry. Until the composition course, I completed Gibbs' assignments because I knew the Lord led me to Gibbs, but I didn't know how the Lord would ever use it. Now I wonder if the Lord wouldn't like me to use it in a publication ministry someday. I also learned much about myself through this course. I discovered my strengths. You exposed me to my weaknesses, and you taught me to evaluate myself, what I did well. I like to write a story with concrete details that cause the reader to see herself in the piece. That made my narrative essay relatively easy and enjoyable to write. Each assignment grew more challenging, but also more rewarding. I enjoy rewriting my essays, laboring for the perfect word and more powerful image. I can usually open essays well and tell stories. What I liked about my work. I like all my pieces because they will, by God's grace, affect an audience. My narrative essay flows with vitalizing details and shares the gospel in a personal, compelling fashion. The Barnabas piece encouraged and convicted me as I meditated on ways the Lord used him. I like the final result because it ought to encourage and motivate the reader, just as it did me. The analogy of the photo albums make it highly readable and memorable. My argument essay plagued me throughout the process, but the final draft should cause the reader to evaluate the basis for her decision. The topic is highly relevant in college ministry, but rarely communicated. Your suggestion to add biblical characters changed from a stale advice to powerful stories. It also refined my thesis, something I struggled with. Now I think it will impact the readers. What I wish I had done differently. I wish I'd revised my last two essays more before I submitted them to you the first time. Your comments were very helpful, but after I made those changes, I still wasn't completely satisfied, so I spent more time struggling with revision. If I'd revised more at first, perhaps the final product would have been better. Goals for future writing. In the future, I need to gain more tools for logical transitions, watch carefully for pronoun problems, and remove wordiness. I need to conclude my essays more effectively as well. I will seek more opportunities to write well-written material because I know these examples will help me. Portfolio lesson. Frustratingly, writing is never complete. Even as I submit these essays, I understand that each contains portions I wish I could improve. I want the words to sing and dance and not just speak. I wish the images would engrave themselves in the minds of the reader so that as they discard the essays will become part of them. Perhaps if given infinite time, I could do that, but I realize that's impossible. I'm thankful that I made the portfolio because I gained revision tools and a more critical eye. You gave me ideas to make weak areas stronger and images more powerful. I also learned the value of friends' feedback as they patiently read and offered advice. Thank you for teaching us. Although the formal composition class is finished, the lessons will not be forgotten. So there's an example of a reflection letter. So your portfolio will contain your three essays that are revised. When are they due? When is the portfolio due? The final due date will be the first day of your Gibbs, which is, I believe, September 15th. And I want the portfolio in its compendium. I don't want you to just send one essay at a time. I want all three on the reflection letter completed. If you so choose, however, to complete the portfolio anytime during the summer and want to submit it to me, I am fine with that. So if you want to say, I want it done in July, then you send it my way, and I will read it. This time I'm going to read it differently. I will not take my pen, hold it back, and I will not write on your papers because this is your final product. I will take it in and have it speak to me in that way. I will write comments on your rubric on the portfolio evaluation of your work, but this is for an audience, and so I will not touch it in that way. Now, on the handout, it says 100 points. Actually, there'll be 150 on this one because each one of your essays will be worth 50 points. So, again, You're getting a lot of points in this composition class as a result. So the portfolios will present your best work. It will show your efforts and progress and achievements over time. And it's used to evaluate your abilities and also your improvement and your growth as a writer. So I'll see where you were on week one of the class and as you end Gibbs composition. So the end of semester assignments, please read and study your handouts. Revise and rewrite your essays for the portfolio. Don't forget that reflection letter. And then submit in the portfolio. I will provide the rubric, so you need not worry about that. I'll put that in your portfolio and use it as your evaluation guide. And also the reflection letter, and then your revised essays, the best they can be. Do I have questions on this as we close the class? You understand about the portfolio? No, I do not. Because that was a dress rehearsal, so to speak. And this is the final performance, so I don't need to see those. I know where you are as writers, where you were, where you are, where you're going to be, so I don't need to revisit those. So I want to leave you with this thought, in this prayer, take control of my words today. May they tell of your great love, and may the story of your grace turn someone to you above. So you can think in terms of that, it will affect an audience. I will continue to pray for you. I will continue to uphold you before the throne of grace, encourage you. I'm here as a resource for you. So if in the future you have other writing outside of Gibbs composition and you want my advice,